everybody, and welcome to the Doomer Optimism Podcast. I am your very frequent host, Ashley, here with Nathan Gates. He's been on many times, guest and host. And I asked Nate here today to talk a little bit about the topic of moving home. I think a lot of people talk a lot about the prospect of moving away or finding a place to move to, fantasies of moving, building a town somewhere new, or moving across the world like I have. But we don't talk as much on this podcast about moving back to where you're from. And so first I wanted to hear a little bit about Nate's story, how he decided to move back to his home place, what that all meant for him, what he was thinking. And then I just want to talk a little bit through where we're at right now, considering the prospect of moving back to the U.S. We've always had a foot in both worlds. We've always gone back to the U.S. regularly to sort of keep up with U.S. culture and family and that kind of thing. But the idea now would be to move primarily there and secondarily spend time in Uruguay. So we're going to explore those themes today. So welcome, Nate. And let's hear the short version of, it doesn't even have to be the short version, whatever version, length version you want of moving back home. And then we'll kind of go from there.
Yeah, let's just fucking go, huh?
Yeah.
So, first of all, I didn't exactly move back home, you know, because I'm from Southern Illinois. That's where I grew up. And I'm in Central Illinois now. And, you know, Illinois is a really long state. So with apologies to people from the Chicago area, you know, all downstate isn't just the same.
No, it is.
It's very long, and it actually kind of culturally very different. But so Southern Illinois is where I was born and grew up, although my parents were Central Illinois people, but still, you know, East Central, and now I'm West Central. This was homecoming for Emily. We are at, you know, the farm that is, you know, 150 years in Emily's family, in the, you know, just outside the town she grew up in. So it was very much a moving home for her. So there's some elements of that that are really unique that I didn't experience, because to me, this is another place that's not, you know, my home place, and I'm settling into it, but it's not like I'm not native to here, even though Illinois is still pretty familiar. But for her, that has been her experience. And there's a lot to dig into today. I mean, the short version is that we left after college because I hung around a year. She graduated a year after I did. We both went to Illinois Wesleyan here in Bloomington, which is like basically an hour and 15 minutes from where we live now. And I graduated and didn't have anything really, any obligations or commitments or anything going on. And interestingly, and we might get into this, right? There's different, and I've been really thinking about this a lot, the different cultures around, the different ideas around home and homecoming. Like when I grew up, my mom grew up on a farm outside of Charleston, Illinois. My dad grew up in town in Charleston, Illinois. And they ended up moving, you know, an hour and a half away is where they kind of landed to raise their family and stuff. So they left their community, but still stayed in the same general region. But growing up, it was clear, and I wouldn't go so far as to say I didn't feel like I was welcome to come back there. Like, there was just, like, the way my parents clearly saw it and the way it seemed was, like, there would be no reason for me to come back home after I graduated. Like, the idea was, the trajectory was for me, go to college, find a way to make a living, and end up where I ended up. And, I mean, it would be weird. It always felt like it would be weird if I had ended up back in that same area instead of Illinois.
It would be a dead end. Like, there's nothing going on here. Is that kind of the story?
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing for you here. Success would be going somewhere else.
Yeah. That was definitely the sense. And, you know, a huge part of that was because my parents weren't really from there either, right? So there wasn't, like, deep family roots. There was, like, my parents, but there was no one else. There were some friends. But it was, yeah, there would have been no reason to, you know, and there's so much bigger and better things out there. And sort of that's how I was raised. Now, Emily was not. Emily grew up, in a town that her, mother's side hadn't, been in for generations and was like 30 minutes from where her dad grew up. So they were super local and deep, were and are still very deeply embedded here. So totally different upbringing. I grew up in the woods. I don't want to say my parents were asocial. They're social people, but they weren't. I guess my mom was pretty embedded in the culture of the local school, moving from parent teacher organization, and she was a teacher and then the whole thing. But that's the sort of the way the Emily's family is. Like, they're just community people. And my parents are not that way. Anyway, Emily and I decided to, after she graduated, I hung around for a year. After she graduated, we moved out to Colorado because we figured, why not? And from my point of view, it's like, hey, I'm going out into the world. I got to find my place. It's just an extension of that. I had some friends moved out to Colorado. Colorado seemed awesome. I really wanted to learn how to fly fish. Let's go. And Emily was up for adventure too. I think my family kind of saw it as completely natural. I think it was much harder for her family to do that, for us to do that, in ways that, I don't think neither she nor I appreciated at the time. And then we were there for like 11 years or so. And what I assume we'll talk about a lot today is sort of, the first few years we were just living there, and we went to grad school out there and just kind of made our life out there. Met a lot of people, met a lot of really wonderful people and friends, and then then had kids. And the idea was always in the back of our mind, like, hey, are we gonna just stay here, like be here? Like, is this home? Or are we gonna end up back in Illinois? And it was really kind of a back and forth. And when we were younger, you just kind of ignored the question because it's like, Colorado's awesome. I'm having a good time. Like, this is great. Illinois is Illinois, which didn't seem very glorious to the our perspectives at the time.
Well, and I would also just add really quick from somebody from Illinois too, like, the geography's so flat. It's so much, there's so many corn and soybeans. Like, there is this sense among anyone who's like, I don't know, upwardly mobile, that like, oh, there's so many more adventurous places you could go. Like, obviously bigger cities, but also like the geography of the West. And this is like historically also, go West, young man, like the West is adventure, that kind of thing. So like, I think it's part of a normal historical lineage to see, get out of the flat plains, the domesticated lands, go into the wild, that kind of stuff.
Yes, and it's also, I think, another side of that that I appreciate now, much more is why, like, it's pretty dumb to leave from a lot of perspective. Like, Illinois, where I live, is like the most fertile place in the entire world as far as, like, if you want to like live, like, if you think historically, I mean, if you want like a good place to live where it's like seasonable and you can grow anything, like, it's like the best place for human settlement that is imaginable on the face of the earth.
It still has so much soil fertility, like, and so, is
Oh,
so
like
flat.
central, yes. Exactly. Central Illinois is basically like, if you're like, hey, I want like a nice, quiet life that is abundant, it's pretty good. But no, not adventure, not a lot of like, if you're craving that sort of, which as younger people, we both kind of were. And we went out there and we took full advantage of the mountains. We were in the mountains all the time, and I got really obsessed with fly fishing, and Emily, would hike around with the dogs and take pictures. Like, we just had a great time in Colorado. We loved it. But then there's this agony that I know you're experiencing, of, oh, stay or go, stay or go, stay or go, stay or go. And I use the word agony on purpose because it was an agony for us. It was like really hard. There was, for a while, it just felt excruciating. And being divided, really divided, between, I mean, what tipped the scale for us was, it's like, well, we have we don't have, neither of us are blessed in that we don't have complicated relationships, you know, with our family. Like, it's pretty easy. Like, I get along great with her parents. She's an only, but I get along great with her parents, and extended family, and she gets along great with mine. And there's no, I mean, other than, you know, like very minor family stuff, like it's really easy. And so we were like, we're 1,000 miles away, and there's two sets of grandparents here that really just want to be around and love our kids. So this is kind of dumb to be 1,000 miles away. And that's what did it for us. We were like,
Yeah.
this is absurd. Like, let's go back and let our kids have relationships with their grandparents.
Yeah.
And also huge. That was one factor. The other factor was, this farm, which Zella, Emily's great grandmother, you know, had made clear, like, you know, if you move back, you can stay at the farm. And at the time, it was, you know, just the farmhouse. You know, the rest of the land was rented out. But, you know, you can stay at the farmhouse, and there's like a couple acres attached to it, and kind of, you know, work on it, fix it up, you know. And so that was appealing. And then it's attached to a much larger farm, that we have intended to all along, and have been chipping away at, you know, making, you know, managing more and more and more of that, making that our own, kind of, you know, from like it all being cash rented to somebody else to, you know, some of the row crops are, but we're doing a lot with the pasture and kind of like making that. I mean, that for me has always been a huge part of my vision, is to make this place into a agroecological lighthouse. But that, you know, so that felt meaningful and really great. And then we have really, really, really dear friends, probably, you know, my wife's best friend, who's actually also has been one of mine, and her husband, who's, you know, also become one of, like, we're really close, same age, have kids similar age, have raised our kids together. And that was a huge part for coming home too, because it felt like, all right, well, there's family, but there's also a real, really close social connection here too. And so there were enough things we felt we could build around.
Yeah.
And so we made the leap, which was crazy, because we weren't, I mean, we just, it was like kind of running, jumping off a moving train, is kind of what moving across the country was for us. It was not neat or orderly, you know, and we didn't have much money saved up, because Colorado is expensive, and we spent about as much as we made. So we didn't have much money saved up. And I got a job, but I didn't like it. So I turned down the job offer and just started a counseling business that basically I had 6 months to be at full time, and, you know, funding our life. Like, just that was the option. So that was extremely stressful. And yeah, like jumping off a moving train was the experience of it. But we got to a point where it's like, well, if we don't do it, we're not going to do it. So let's go.
Yeah,
And so I
okay.
guess that's
So
the rambling.
yeah, all
Yeah.
right. So I have a couple of themes I want to dig into. The first one I just want to mention, and it's probably going to come up a bunch in the rest of this conversation, which is kind of the way I see my Twitter account and doomer optimism in general, is how do you, as like an individual actor with agency, navigate a chaotic world, and how much to take on yourself, and how much to integrate into the society as it already is and lean into those resources as they exist at the risk of like putting your soul at hazard. So it's like one of those things where it's like the world seems pretty messy and chaotic right now. It's changing really rapidly. No one really knows what to expect. I still have a lot of doomer tendencies about like the direction things are going and the direction of the culture and, you know, just biophysical limits and stuff like that. And so, but then there's like a point at which like maybe you would just be better off not knowing that stuff and just living like your ancestors did or what, and staying connected to your family, like just knowing all of that stuff and constantly having to analyze and having this analysis paralysis, like, well, what if this, what if that? That's one thing that I've just dealt with my entire adult life, and it's just horrible because you're just constantly thinking like, I just want to prepare myself. I want to have a nice quiet life. Like I would be happy if we were thriving, but like mi bare minimum, I just don't want to like have kids and have them like suffer, put them into difficult situations of where it's going to be really tough for them or for me. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that before I have a couple other themes I wanted to bring up too.
Well, sure, they could go a lot of different directions, but since the last thing Kenny said was about kids, because that's, I mean, obviously that was, a huge part of our decision. And, at some point you kind of want to go back to what you know. I mean, at least that's my, that was my experience. Like, I grew up very rurally, in the woods, outside. I was the kid running around with skinny knees all summer and doing that whole thing, right, just in the woods, in the creeks, playing outside. And so that's familiar to me in child rearing, and then being in the city, which I loved. I'm not an anti-city person. I loved living in Denver. I loved every minute of living in Denver. I think it's great. It was an awesome thing. I liked being close to everything. I liked our neighborhood. I liked the people in it. So I wasn't one of those, like, I gotta get out of here. I want to go live on a farm, like that whole thing. I mean, I did in the end do that, but like it wasn't because I felt like I had to get away from the city. It was because I wanted to get towards, our families and towards a familiar way to bring our kids up, like outside. And for Emily, of course, it's coming back to very familiar to how she, I mean, in a way, it's interesting because she grew up in town. I mean, Avon town of 1,000 people, a little teeny town, but as she grew up in town, she's a town person, and so being out here on the farm was the first time she ever really lived rurally. Which is the, I mean, that was a learning curve for her there. I mean, there was a learning curve for both of us, but at least the living in the country, for me, it just felt like, yeah, yes, this is nice. Living in the city, I, like I said, I liked it, but I also like that I can just make a huge fire whenever I want and do that whole thing. And the kids can just run around. They can just run around. Like, if they go outside in their underwear, like, who cares? And so, bring it back to what you said. It's like, you, for me, it was like bringing up the kids in a way that felt familiar. And then I think, well, I have very much the same doomer tendencies. At times have been like overwhelmingly bad doomer tendencies. Now I feel like in a better place with them, because I don't think about that as much, is the main thing. One of the cool things about the way that we have raised the kids is I feel like, when you're, I don't know, hyper controlling maybe of their environment, like, that sounds bad, but we have been that way. Like, we're not like, no, that's not the right phrase, because we're not the kind that just, like, hey, pull them out of the world and don't interact with the world. But like, I mean, really, really strict on screens, really strict on like exposure to a lot of things that I consider toxic, but really open about, the facts of life, being social in community. Like, we have them interacting with people a lot. Like, even though we homeschool, like, they're involved in sports and they're involved, like, they see people, they're very socially engaged. So it's not like we're trying to like shelter them from the world, but there is a sheltering thing that you do where you're allowing them to just become like really strong, well-developed, kids. And it's that that gives me confidence, because the world's going to be what the world's going to be. Right. Like, but if they're, emotionally, mentally, physically well developed, like, that's the whole job. It's not to prepare for any specific scenario, because I can't, who knows? It's to have them, prepared to face whatever scenario, and even if that's just living out a good life on the farm and like, oh, look, everything turned out fine, there's no problems, or, something considerably harder,
So I was just, this is something I think about that question in terms of how much to let, like if the family is like a cell, how much to let in the cell boundary before like the cell has to go fend for itself or something, whatever, some kind of natural model. And it's like you have to let something in the boundary to like fortify it, but how much and what is such a question. And I think this is at the heart of homeschooling and public school and just schooling in general debate, which is, if they're going to be a part of that community, then they should have to deal with X, Y, and Z kids who are a result of the parents of that community. But on the other hand, they can still deal with those kids and connect with that community. in other ways and be fortified against some of the stupider parts of school or the more draconian or the more harmful or traumatic. And then
Well,
yet
in my opinion, there's
yeah.
a big difference between, how would I say it? Being having to learn to deal with other people. Of course, that's life, that's social, right? That's just being a part of a community, that's being a part of the world. But there's a line between, learning to interact with people and half and like sort of being formed by that, right? And it's the being formed by that that I'm like, no, I don't
Yeah.
want them to be formed by social pathologies everywhere. Like, I don't want their character and who they are like to be formed by that. And I know because I'm, like my whole philosophy of parenting is I want Emily and I to be the main influences on their life. And then their grandparents and kind of concentric circles outside. And so especially when they were younger, we were really, I mean, I think we were pretty zealous about, making sure that the influences on them were influences that we, felt good about.
Yep.
And much less so now, much less so now. They're 12 and 15. And so not that they're completely formed by any means, but it's much less of that. So there's a big difference between being formed by sort of the craziness around versus, being exposure to it and being learning to interact with it and learning to navigate it.
Yeah, totally. Okay, so in terms of the familiar, one thing I wanted to bring up is one thing we're struggling with here is despite it being this here being Uruguay, despite it being a well-formed community that has really pretty great social norms, very great politeness, great cultural norms, expectations that kids talk to adults and are polite. Lots of time spent outdoors, a lot of time spent with, each other talking. Despite all of that, we're not from here. And so fundamentally, you do kind of hit a wall where I think either you take one for your family and commit to staying in the place, and then your kids are from that place. And then ideally, they're going to have that familiarity and that comfort. And this is the case with like anyone e immigrating, but even moving to a new city or whatever. Or you lean into the culture you're from as the parents and just make it the best you possibly can. And one thing I'm realizing, so a little bit, I'll give a little bit of backstory on my trajectory. So I'm from this like working class neighborhood in Chicago. I think there was sort of like a soft expectation that, if you talk to anyone not from that neighborhood, like, oh, that's kind of a backwards place, like the values are just like, sports and family and, whatever, drinking at the Irish pubs or whatever. If you want to be something, you're going to want to leave that neighborhood. Even if you want to stay in Chicago, you're going to want to go to the north side, not stay on the south side. And so then I went to University of Chicago. I got a scholarship there, and so it was like I'm in this whole new social world and this expectation that I would travel and never come back to that neighborhood. So I always kind of thought of it as like a backwards place. From anyone I felt like I kind of looked up to as successful, they were like, "Oh, this, that neighborhood, like you're bigger than that. Your life is bigger than that neighborhood." And then I've come on this whole long arc where I'm like, what people really need are strong kinship ties. It's really hard to make those kin ties non-familial. And this is like a controversial statement, I think, to say to, in some leftist circles, but it just is simply much more difficult to make the same depth of ties in a non-family setting. Like Friendsgiving is great, but it's not the same as generationally belonging. And just thinking about like how much though at least my neighborhood where my family's from, these families in this neighborhood, there's like a historic there's a historical pattern of like white flight and that kind of thing. But these South Side families have sort of moved around these South Side neighborhoods together and go back generations of knowing one another. And they have these family names, and it's like a small town. And like, oh, what's your last name? Oh, are you related to this person with that same last name? And then, you're kind of in the club, you have all these sorts of resources, you know how everything works. But then, like, culturally, there are like actually some issues with the place, not just the place, but also like the US in general and the trajectory of things. So that's like that's really the tension right now, is this like familiar, and I think I could lean into the best parts of it because I know it so well. I could even try to, I even have the agency because I'm familiar with the place and from it, to like muscle the place in some significant ways potentially, like because I know it and because I feel confident. Like here in Uruguay, I wouldn't be trying to like change the school system at all. I feel like I'm an outsider and that would be like chauvinistic of me. But in the neighborhood I'm from in Chicago, like I can get involved in stuff. I know these institutions. I know the history of them. I've been from this neighborhood my whole life. I know all the people involved. I know what their motivations are. Versus like this intact culture where you could give your kids this much more functional family village culture at the expense of, some, a generation kind of lost in belonging. That makes sense.
One thing, Emily, and this is something that we saw was one thing that Emily I think experienced coming back to where she's from. And again, I'm not re really from here, and so I've kind of never expected to be overwhelmingly, I mean, I know how small towns are and it takes a long time, but they're this particular community, like all communities, they've run continuously and lived continuously the way they lived, for the entire time, the 15 or so years that Emily didn't live here anymore. So coming back, it's like, yeah, she's from here, but also not a part of anything, right? And so it's sort of like everyone's been like affectionate and welcoming and like, oh, it's so nice that you're home. But also, it's, I think it's actually for her been harder in some ways than for me, because she's come back to a place that she's from, but she's not, it's not the same, right? Because it's been so far away, you changed so much, she changed so much, other people did too, but like in a different way, but and not in this, like they're still, I mean, they didn't go, well, some people did leave and come back, but a lot of people didn't at all. And so there is this like real difference. So that's an interesting dynamic that I think has been more challenging for her than for me, because like I said, I had never expected, because I didn't know any of these people outside of meeting them and them coming to my wedding and then seeing them a couple times a year when I'd come, when we'd come visit from Colorado. And so I was like, well, yeah, of course nobody knows me. And but so that, so that's an interesting dynamic too, is like, she came and started to, like, she dipped her toe in, was going to get involved in like the local fair, and just had a really bad experience of sort of being, of having like the ability, and like, she's a fundraiser, that's what she did in her, for when she worked, I mean, she did that at a pretty high level in Colorado and then moved back here, and she wasn't working, but she sort of was volunteering, putting her skills to use, and like was really boxed out, in a way that was pretty dirty in my point of view watching it. And I think it was sort of like, you gotta be fucking kidding me. Like, it was really frustrating.
In a way that like
Because
this is our turf, like don't come back here and try to instill
it
your
felt like that,
or take control over.
it felt that way. It felt that way. This is that, that's not how we do things, which is a sort of a, I mean, it's totally different. I'm, up in it, I mean, I don't know anything really about the context you're talking about, but I know in rural places, there's the, we've talked about the pull and the push, the pull of the world pulling people out in a way. But then there's also the push. There's like the refusal of communities to adapt with the times. There's a refusal of communities to do things differently. There's a refusal of communities sometimes to allow younger people to leave their mark, and to make changes. Like, 'cause this is how we do things. This is how we've always done things. This is how we've always going to do things.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a real frustration, I think, a thing that is not helping the case, around where I live. It's like, yeah, there are all these pulls of the world that are pulling people away or changing the character of the community from the outside, but then there's also just a steadfast refusal to adapt, that I see a lot that sort of actually exacerbates and makes those tendencies worse. But that's a bit of an aside, I guess.
Yeah, well, okay, so one thing that I'm reminded of with you talking just now is Andy, the Adirondacker, has this synthesis between wanting to belong to his area where he's from, upstate New York, and then wanting to travel. And he keeps telling me this thing where he had this conversation with a friend where it's like you can never come back again after you've traveled away and you've been different. And this has happened to me a bunch of times. Like even first time I studied abroad and I never had left the United States. I spent a semester in Rome and then I came back and I just like saw Chicago with completely new eyes. Like, it's just not the same place and I'm so different. And everybody else is exactly the same and it's really hard to relate and that kind of thing. But now I'm kind of at the point of like coming back to my roots and seeing a lot of the wisdom in the way things are done in my neighborhood, and thinking about how I could have a synthesis of those two parts of myself. I mean, and I think it's going to be different in Chicago too, because it's even though it's like they call it like the village in the city, so it is like a small town, it's still cosmopolitan because it's a city, and so the young people are going to be more cosmopolitan, and are probably going to be okay with like letting things evolve over time. And I know a lot of the young people are interested in different ideas and this kind of thing. And so it's difficult. But then there's also the question, this is just a general philosophical question, like being in a place but not of it. It's like how much you engage deeply in it or let it completely change you. I don't know. There's no answer to that. I think it's just a constant ongoing navigation. It kind of reminds me of our left conservatism talk about religion. You can go to church and still be like grappling with it all the time. And the same thing with like a culture or a place. You can go and live in a place, but not buy hook, line, and sinker every part of it and how it works. The
Yeah,
question.
that synthesis that oh,
Oh
go
yeah,
ahead,
you go,
sorry.
you go, you go. I have another question, but it's separate.
The synthesis thing is, I mean, that's that I mean that is really what it comes down to is, it just takes a long, long, long time.
A lot of navigating, like constant nuanced intuition.
It's been like now 11 years for us, and just it just takes a long, long time, to be your self and to do things that are, in line with what's important to you, and to find people who support that, and connect with that, but without being aloof from or, quote better than, other people. And so like there's a way of being with, there's a lot of people here who don't see things the same as me and don't share my values, that's for sure. But that's okay. I mean, I get along with them. I get along with everybody here pretty well, fine. But there's certain things that are just like they're just different. And that's again, that's fine. I'm good with that difference. But there's also like I know that that isn't I'm not going to be feel supported in certain things that are important to me, by people who don't share that, because of course not. So it's a matter of finding, because no matter where you're at, there's a diversity of people. Like I think people tend to think like it's a monolith, like oh, it's a working class neighborhood, or oh, it's rural America, so everybody's like this or everybody's like that, and that's not true in the slightest. There's
No.
still a huge diversity of people within that. So you find people that you can really connect with, right? That like really get each other. I think that's essential. We have like that's our couple friend that I mentioned. Like people that you're like, okay, we can just like be. I think those people are as important as family. Where it's like I don't even have to pretend to be anything other than who I am. And then there's other people who that have really good relationships. It's not, this isn't even like a negative thing. It's just like I'm not my full exact self precise. I mean, not like I'm.
You know which parts of yourself to bring forward with them. And it's
Yeah,
not, and it's, yeah,
put
it's
that's a
one
good way to
part
put
and
it.
not another.
Right. And it's smooth. It's not like a awkward thing. It's just like there's a there's like these, yeah, concentric circles or rings, I guess. You know, so I think having those people who are, you know, you're just really deeply connected with are important. And then, you know, navigating, you know, maybe there's people with different values. Maybe there's people who see things and they see things totally differently. But you still have a lot in common, you know, with those people too. I think that's, you know, especially now that we've been here 11 years, and we're not going anywhere. And I think people understand that we're not going anywhere. There is a lot in common, you know, and especially if they see how our kids are doing, and our kids are great and respectful, and you know, so there's just a lot more, you know, acceptance. It's like, well, maybe there's not complete values overlap, but like you guys don't seem like you're operating from a completely foreign way of looking at the world, so that it kind of relaxes everything.
What do you think is the role? I could say what I think, but what do you think is the role of kids in this whole decision-making process? Because I feel like young, childless people can kind of be uprooted, and it is a little bit alienating, but I feel like the idea of having kids and being super concerned about their well-being can really accelerate the thinking on it. And what do you want for them, the legacy? And then
Oh,
I think,
yeah.
like, thinking about the kids as a shared project of the community is a huge thing for me. Like, who are their influences? And then when the kids, like, in at least in my case, when people see how my kids are, they want us to be a part of their community because, like, my parents, Pat's parents, my siblings. It's just really joyful to just see the interaction both in both directions. It's good for the kids, but also when the kids are great, not that my kids are perfect or anything, but when the kids are fun and a good expression of the family, it's beneficial in the other direction too. Like people like being around them. And so I feel like kids can really accelerate this thinking in a way, or make it more concrete, or make it more serious in a way that I think when you're just kind of like a childless, globalist bouncing around from city to city, it just doesn't feel as concrete or important.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, it's the thing that brought everything to a head for us. It was like, you know, kind of like, you know, before we had kids, it was like, well, we're going back to Illinois. Oh, kind of maybe. Maybe we will. Maybe we won't. We'll see. You know, and then it was like, you know, it was a few years after we had the kids before we moved, but as soon as we had them, it really brought the front and center, like, oh boy, now we need to make a decision about
How
this.
old was your oldest when you moved back?
When we moved, they were 5 and 2.
Okay.
Yeah. And we decided to move when they were probably 3 and under 1. That's when we decided. And then it took kind of a year and a half, 2 years to do it. But we made the decision. We just, a combination of it, like, legitimately was kind of tricky with kids that age to kind of plan everything and get everything moved. And also, in addition to that, we were dragging our feet. So yeah, that, but it definitely brought the whole thing to a head, like having to, you know, like, okay, we got to decide for, you know, for these kids, what we're going to do. Speaking of, hi, Quinn.
Oh, hi.
What are you looking for?
I'm oh, geez.
I don't have that piece out here.
I'm sorry.
It's all right.
Okay, so I have a so our version of this is before we had kids at all, and this was very spreadsheet brain of me, but I don't care. I this is why I'm so critical of like spreadsheet brain and leftist, because I know this world, I know this way of thinking. But I said, like, I don't even want to get pregnant until I know that I could have a place for the kids and family to live that is safe, and that they're going to thrive in, and that we know that they're safe, like will thrive away from really bad influences. And I at the time was not was very concerned about the school system in Chicago, the amount of, you know, pharmaceuticals like ADHD, Adderall type stuff that was being prescribed in schools in general, mm-hmm. Just the trajectory of everything. And so we said, like, we're moving to Uruguay, at least for the kids' early childhood. We know that the schools here are just very wholesome, like rural schools, and very safe and away from danger, and they're going to have a really wholesome life. Now that my oldest is turning is 10, now it's the time where I'm considering moving back, because she's starting to get more complicated, and it's not the early childhood stage. It's more the, what kind of young adult influences do I want her to have? What kind of resources too? I mean, the other thing I didn't really think about before we moved here, the way of the world as it is, cities have more resources than rural areas. My daughter wants to get into some esoteric instrument, into theater, into art, and she's very artistic. We're going to have so many choices in the US, whereas here, you know, you're going to have one or two little arts programs maybe, and there's just such a plethora of options with that. So that's just one thing, just thinking about like the actual resources in the world as they are. It's one thing to think about like a very wholesome early childhood, but I do think things get more complicated as they turn into, it's like the 8 to 18 period is so critical. Who mm-hmm. they're around, who their peer group is, what kind of access to resources they have. But I really am still not convinced, like, you know, what if she falls into the wrong group or has a terrible experience, all three of them. But mm-hmm. we'll just leave that for a second. I have a practical question or a descriptive question that might help us think about this for you. I know your kids go to the fair, the county fair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, tell me about that. Like, what has that been like in terms of the kids interacting with the local culture, the rural culture? You know, just tell me, like, what, you know, basically, what has that been like, and any insights from that?
Oh boy, that's a can of worms. So first of all, my older one is the one who's really connected around that. Like, Miles just didn't really get into cattle showing. It's not his thing. He's like, I have to wash a cow every day and then walk it around in a circle in front of people. It sounds about as fun as I think it sounds personally. But Quinn, for whatever reason, Quinn, you know, he was five, right when we moved here, it was like maybe when he was six. So it was like the first summer, like he did a bucket calf, which we have, actually it's Emily has, I mean, they're my friends too, but she grew up with them. A family, the parents are, you know, maybe a little younger than our parents, so they're kind of at that in between age, but their kids, adult children, are like maybe 10 to 15 years younger than us. But they really got into cattle showing, and then Quinn came along, and they were kind of the kid who was really into it, she kind of aged out of it, and they asked if Quinn wanted to show a bucket calf. And he did, and he loved it, and it's the cutest thing in the world, kids showing bucket calves, because they get all dressed up in their little Western gear, and they walk around with this little guy. It's like the cutest thing.
Wait, and you like, and you are like seeking that culture for your kids. You like that.
Yeah. Well, in particular, Emily, much more so than me on that front, actually, because, you know, like we were wanting to do cattle, and like, you know, that was a, you know, priority of ours, and being involved with the farm, and it was a good way to learn about cattle. And they sort of just adopted Quinn into this, and they're like, okay, well, we don't have, it's kind of like, I call him a cat, he's their cattle jockey, right? Because they, you know, for the longest time, like, they have a breeding program, and they're, you know, raising shorthorns, and so Quinn would basically show for them, and, you know, we buy, you know, there are different arrangements there, but Quinn got involved and, you know, really apprenticed under with them. And I have to this day not had that much to do with it. I have a complicated relationship with cattle showing, because cattle showing is a ton of time and extremely expensive. And yeah, I don't know. And I'm cantankerous about things sometimes, but you know, Emily's been the leading force, and it's good. It's been amazing for Quinn, and he's learned a ton, and he's taken a lot of responsibility. He does it all himself now. It's not even like, I mean, I don't do anything. His mom, you know, drives him around. He, you know, he takes care of the animals. He knows when, you know, knows when they need to be fed and how much. And
you know what you sound like? You sound like me with these giant pumpkin competitions. It's like a waste of time. It's not that practical, blah blah blah. But the people who get into it, it's like a camaraderie thing.
Yeah. No, and that's great. And that is great. And that's been, there's a lot of, like, again, this is me, curmudgeonly me, you know, there's a lot of things about the cattle showing, especially in recent years, that I'm just like, are you kidding me? Because it's so really at this point completely divorced from actual concerns of producing cattle. It's like, like, you know, you're creating, like, it's almost like they might as well, these show animals, it might as well be a separate species. And the money that's spent is like, not we don't spend that kind of money, but like, it's unbelievable.
The amount of effort they put in to like grow them on a certain thing and then to move them around. Like, it's so stupid, but I can see people, they get into it because it's like silly and, you know, funny to see how big. It's mass affluence.
Pretty sure next summer my dad's going to be out here with Miles seeing how big of a pumpkin they can grow. My dad's a world-class gardener. The guy can grow anything, and Miles is really getting into it. And so I think the thought that, like, it's like, well, that's going to be awesome and fun, and like exactly what a 12-year-old is going to think is cool.
Yeah.
So I think that's, they'll be doing the big pumpkin next year. And so I think the show has been great. It's really been a way for Quinn too. He's connected with that family, obviously, really, really deeply. And they've been really good to him. And I appreciate them very much. So my curmudgeonliness about showing isn't, you know, like, they've been great. It's not that. It's just more like, in general, it's a bunch of time. And but I'm proud of him. He does great, and he has he shows up at the fair every year, and that's really good. The various fairs, and it's invaluable for connecting with the community. So I have to acknowledge that.
I'm
grumpy. I just am.
Tell me a little bit about, and I have one other question that's unrelated, but tell me a little bit about how it's been to be around the grandparents. What has that been like?
Wonderful. that's the short version. But like, again, we're fortunate in that we have great relationships with them, and it's not really complicated. So when we moved here for the first, 10 years being here, my parents lived in Southern Illinois. And so we were basically not neighbors, but like, you know, just down the road from my in-laws. And so they were much more involved in just the day, and still really are more involved in the day-to-day life. Like, Sarah is here all the time and just really involved in the nitty gritty of everyday life. My parents were in Southern Illinois. They actually just moved up here, and my sister moved here. So that's been a cool thing too, is like, you know, us moving here and really planting a flag and being like, we're here and we're going to be here and we're not ever going to go anywhere else. Has drawn, you know, people to us, you know, like, mm-hmm. And my sister lives in town 30 minutes away. My parents now live 10 doors down from my sister. And that's really a cool thing. How that's sort of happened.
What are your thoughts on related to this? You know how all these people say, like, let's bring like-minded people together and let's all like buy houses near each other versus family members doing that. Do you have thoughts on this? I mean, I personally have seen a lot of the former go sour very, very badly. I'm thinking of one particular project in recent memory where all these people moved together, and of course nobody knew each other. There's really no vetting other than just come if you like the idea of this project. A lot of the people who end up getting drawn into such an extreme move are kind of hard to deal with, tend to be hard to deal with people anyways, because they haven't yet like found their community. So they just think like, oh, if only the right community comes along, then I'm going to feel belonging. Versus family where, you know, you might not get along perfectly, but you kind of have a, you have a history and you have a genetic commitment to mutual thriving. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think what you're talking about, like the, you know, like let's move and make some version of an intentional community is, you know, it's just too much too fast. It's way, it's putting the cart in front of the horse. I mean, in just our own circumstance, certainly we moved here and Emily's family was here, but just equally as important was the friends that I mentioned before. And in some ways we built our lives around them even more than around family. I mean, we're, you know, our, like I said, our kids grew up together and, you know, that, that connection is really, really deep and strong, but you know, we, it was like, we're both members of the same community. It's not like we're trying to form a separate community that's just us at all. You know, but definitely kind of have built our lives together. So I don't know. I just think
that I feel like that's a very normal, like small town thing to do where like a couple of families are like allies. I think of Pat's dad, his best friend from childhood, their families were raised together and now they're like a network. They're almost like a kinship network.
Oh yeah.
They were raised together. And anytime any one of the siblings who are all, there's four and three, these seven siblings who all now have their own families, who they, those kids are now raised together. Those are our kids. Anytime anyone needed anything, everyone would drop something for that, for each other. Mm-hmm. That's how close the relationship is. And so that's a very common thing and very traditional, which I think would be different.
Yeah. Well, and it's not, and I guess my point this is that it's not familial exactly, you know.
No, right, I mean, right,
it's not, but it's I think a lot of this is about place, you know, it's about place and commitment, you know, a lot of it is about commitment. And I, that's the big thing I knew in when we were in because being common, there goes the lawnmower, so there's a little noise here, but being in Colorado, I loved the people we were involved with there. I mean, like, we've met a lot of really good people that we loved and still love, and they're wonderful. But I think the thing that doesn't hold together is nobody knows exactly what they're going to do, right? Like, it's like, well, you could end up, you know, could end up, and there's always a part that holds back a little bit, you know, if you're like with family, it's like, well, you know that no matter what, you're family. But when it's friends, even friends with a lot of shared values and a lot of like deep connection, well, who knows where the wind's going to blow, versus, you know, here committed, like we're not going anywhere. Like for sure. That's just like a, I mean, I guess the world's crazy and things happen, but there's the commitment is that this is where we're going to live. And the commitments of our friends is like, this is where we live and where we're going to live. And when that happens, I think then the friend and in a common place with a shared commitment to being there, that's a different thing. You know, that's a really different thing, because then you can, you know, that's when those multi-generational ties can begin, you know, to develop, and that sort of like you build your lives together knowing, I mean, no, to the extent, I mean, things happen. But the idea is that, not the idea, but the lived experience is that we're part of each other's lives, period.
Yeah. What it reminds me of, do you remember you and I don't remember if it was the left conservatism or a different episode, we were talking about marriage and what happens when you commit.
Yeah.
And you just say, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to take this vow. And there's something different when you take the vow. And you're just like, yeah, it's, I mean, yeah, maybe think extenuating circumstances happen, but unless it's an extreme circumstances, we're going to stick to this. We're going to commit to it. We're going to do our best through any kind of situation. I think it sounds a little bit like that, where you're just like, there's a security in it that makes you want to go full throttle.
Yeah. It's not a decision anymore. The decision's already made. So there's not like, that's not a thing that you're weighing. It's not a decision. It's like, I mean, look, fate could intervene and something could happen. That's always a possibility in life, you know. You never know. But like, we could get hit by lightning, like nothing's guaranteed. But when you take it out of the realm of decisions, Yeah. This isn't a decision. Where I'm going to live isn't a decision. Like, it's not something I weigh. It's not something I think about. It's not something I'm trying to like, well, is there a better place? Is there like,
oh my God, Nate, this is making me agonize. You know, it's the same thing with relationships where you're like, I think so many people do this. They're with somebody and then they think, well, could I get someone better? And it's such a depraved way of thinking. But I've been totally indoctrinated from early on. Like, go, you know, are you considering all the possibilities? Are you putting it all into a spreadsheet? I'm even thinking about Chicago. I literally have stuff in a spreadsheet. Suburbs, different. I'm coming out of the closet. The suburbs, what are the pluses and minuses, these different neighborhoods. And it's just like, it is so agonizing to be constantly like trying to maximize utility as opposed to just pick a place, commit to it, and then go full throttle on it with all your agency and all your heart.
Yeah. And that was where we were fortunate in that it was obvious for us. It was never like, well, where? It's like, well, no, it's the farm. It's either the farm or, hey, we'll keep doing what we're doing in Colorado because Colorado is awesome. Yeah. Like, it's a very clear choice. It's not like, well, then we have to. I mean, we did think about whether we wanted to build a house here or stay in the farmhouse, which we made the wrong choice to stay in the farm. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. It's
you committed to
it's
it.
More
You're expensive. Married to
it's
it
more
now,
expensive. Nate. Yeah. It's more expensive and everything to fix up an old farmhouse than just start over. But whatever, it's what we've done. Yeah, exactly. You just same with marriage, same with this. It's like the a commitment is like a real deep commitment. You can build around that, right? Like you can build around it. There's a foundation there. It's not something that you're gonna like reevaluate with new information.
Yeah.
It's not that anymore. It's deeper than that. It's more solid than that. And so then, you know, it's like when you're living in the city, what I mean is when I was living there and, you know, we had like, it's, you know, nothing was built that way because it was always contingent on choices that could just wipe it all away. Right. Like our closest friends could leave, we could decide to leave. Like it's all contingent on, you know, like whatever, like, oh, there's a great job over here or there's a great neighborhood. Like it's just all contingent.
Right.
Versus and everyone's here's not,
yeah,
it's not. It's
pick the best thing at whatever moment. Yeah.
Yeah. That utility maximization, or is there something better? And then something funny happens when there's that, you do that for a while too. And I have for 11 years now. And it's like, and I used to think that way, like, oh, is there somewhere better? And man, I don't, not only do I not think that way, but I feel like, you know, it's kind of funny in this conversation. I feel like definitely like we have, looking over our shoulders, we have John and Nia like in this conversation, I feel like. but I think of them like, you know, as like, not only is it like, I don't really think about whether there's a better place out there. I'm like, well, this is the best fucking place there is. So
yeah, right. I know.
Like it changes into that.
Yeah, I know. And I can feel myself already because every time I go back to Chicago, I just think like about what's great about it. What's great about, you know, I've done all this stupid theoretical work and have come to the conclusion that like having deep kinship ties in a place that people are committed to with people who are committed to one another is actually the best thing. And maybe that's in my like backwards neighborhood that I'm from. Fine. You know, that's fine. And it's better than trying to make a fake, you know, version of it. That's just, you know, it's not, it doesn't have the depth and never could. Could after a few generations, but.
Yeah. Here's another variable for me that is ultra important that would be different, I think, is because, you know, talk about place and like the farm and the acreage I'm on has done as much as any human relationships to make me feel at home here.
Yeah, I was going to bring this up.
Yeah, making a relationship with this farm, this place, seeing it change over time, feeling and owning that role of steward, however awkwardly and naively and without skill I do it. I'm trying. and I'm learning, I think. But that I mean, I feel like that's my most, I feel most at home in the world here on this place. Well, obviously with the three members of my family, but like there's a relationship with this farm that I have built over the last 11 years that is like really in me and growing rapidly the more we're getting involved in this. And that's that, as far as being home in the world for me personally, is it's as much as anything. It's as much as any single relationship with a person. It's tremendous.
So I've been thinking a lot about this too. Like, okay, so I'm not from a rural area. I'm from a city. And if I actually think that it's important to have these agroecological connections to be like an agroecological lighthouse, like you were saying, what am I giving up there? And I do love having a relationship with the land here, like the land that we're on, and just noticing it and stewarding it over time. And I would say that's almost as important as like the local community relationships we've made. I don't really know how to think about this other than it's kind of where I'm from. I have a couple of ways of approaching the big picture. I was going to ask you, like, big picture, what you see your role is. And I think about this all the time, like, just this post came up, if one out of 10 Americans kept chickens in their backyard, X, Y, and Z. And I do think that there is still a role to like show some kind of backyard production in cities. And I think that could be one thing where I would be like, get really gung-ho about. I know it's possible to keep chickens in Chicago, and there's like a whole community around that, and just kind of like accelerating that group, because I know that there's a lot of people doing really, really cool stuff. So I studied for my dissertation that I
There
could
is cool stuff. There is cool
showcase.
stuff. I had when we lived in the city, we had a backyard, and we rented actually. But there was a woman who was she was doing she started a backyard farming thing where she was like leasing people's backyards and then growing food that she'd sell. And we did that with her, because we had a little tiny garden, but we were kind of like, well, go for it. It'd be kind of cool. And we did that for her with her for a year or two. It was kind of neat. And there is stuff like that depending on what you find. And I think it's an amazing way to form community.
Yeah, I mean, but my in-laws, they live in Minneapolis, my Patrick's sister and her husband, and they have some program where some guy comes around and inoculates mushrooms underneath people's backyard trees in wood chips, and then sells the mushrooms at the farmers market. So it's one of those things where it's a similar kind of thing where you're kind of like pooling resources and getting some kind of kickback. It's like a little bit of like tenant farming on the teeniest scale. But yeah,
Teeny
just thinking about those different
micro
things.
tenant.
Yeah, and then having relationships that I've also known when I interviewed people, there's like these ongoing relationships between city producers and rural producers, and like fomenting that kind of exchange, where I knew some city producers who
Oh
produce
man.
chickens and like a bunch of different poultry, and when they got too big, they would give them to the farm in return for like processed meat and all these kind of exchanges. So I'm excited about the prospect of those kind of things. I still am worried about being in a city where nobody has any skills in the case of emergency. I mean, at that point, I'm just running away. I'm just having a bug out bag.
There's a certain act of, I mean, there's a certain act of faith though in just living where you're just like, well, okay, I'm gonna do my best and just,
And I also
but
like I've learned a
catastrophe can happen.
Yeah, right. It can happen anywhere, and you have to stu like that's all. The doomerism is a little spreadsheet brain too. It's a little, thinking about the every possible scenario, and you can't be really prepared for every possible scenario. Then another thing I've kind of come to the conclusion is we've learned a lot during our time in Uruguay about rural living, about production, about what it takes. And so I kind of see a potential for an arc where I bring those lessons from a different world and from the rural area into the city and say, like, all this stuff is possible on this scale, and this is what we can do. And there's like just showcasing all this really like interesting imaginative stuff, which I've been disconnected to living here, just learning like how it works if you're actually trying to do a farm. I have neighbors and we work with farmers here. That could be a cool thing. That could be a field school activity where you're going around urban gardens and seeing what people are doing. Like, you know,
Oh, 100%. There's a ton of the cool thing about a city, right? Is that you have people everywhere, right? Like that, and that is awesome, right? Then that's a resource that you don't have as much in rural areas. I mean, there's people, but like in there's so many people, you know, in the city, and there's, I think, a lot of people who are hungry for this sort of thing. And you can find people and get enthusiasm, and you can build things in the city, you know, that involve, human beings.
Right.
You
and
know,
it's not hard for them to reach, and you can showcase it, and you don't have to get
no.
to the rural area. And, you know, there's all of those positives, but the negatives are, you know, just infinite consumerism and a bunch of people who don't know how to provide anything.
It's true, but a lot of people don't, I think a lot of people don't want to live that way, or can kind of sense the hollowness of that. And they don't want to, you know, they might have that sense, but they don't want to, you know, move to Uruguay or whatever. Right.
Right.
Like they're just like,
right.
Well, I live here, but like, you know, they can connect.
They want to know a practical approach. And I think, yeah, that could be my potential next chapter is sort of really leaning in on, you know, what could we practically do in the developed world? You know, that's like this, there's a couple of different people who have been on the podcast who have talked about this, and Trace's work, for example, but it would be cool to show like the urban and suburban level. And as a way of like my love letter to the place that I'm from, like, okay, let's try to make this place the best that we can with what I see coming.
And
running away from it.
And I think you said something. And I think you said something that was really, I think a lot about too. It's like the building of a, building bridges, I think, between, you know, urban and rural places, because, you know, there's so much room for rural production, but there's always going to be, you know, there's always going to be a dependence to a certain degree on, you know, products from rural areas. And to kind of like, right now it's like foreign countries, and I, like around here, there's a farm I met. These farmers, and they do kind of a cool thing. I mean, a really cool thing, cool grass-fed, whatever. I was talking to them about marketing, and they were kind of talking about having a difficult time sometimes marketing. And then, you know, in another breath, they were talking about people from the city and referring to them as cityites, you know, and I'm sort of like,
not inaccurate, totally.
No, but at the same time, it's like, you know, it's going to be hard to market to people you just actively hate. Like,
yeah,
that's
right.
Going to, like, right. That's hard to do.
Right.
Like it does. Right? Like, you don't want to know and understand, and you are judging and you're just disliking. Like, that is a barrier. I mean, you can always sell shit. Like, salesmanship doesn't necessarily mean that you authentically understand, but I think it can. And so I think that, I really, you know, as we, right now we have, I mean, 5 animals a year, that we're, so we sell out every year pretty easily, but the time will come probably the next 2 or 3 years where we're going to have a lot more to sell. And I'd be, you know, and I kind of want to, I don't view it as just like, I want to, unload stuff in the city. I want to like kind of form that connection,
right,
you know, with customers in the city, and to build that understanding, you know. And in a perfect world, it's like there's a back and forth. Like, I want, you know, people, it's a bit of a travel, but come visit and go, you know, there's like a, you know, it's almost like an ambassador for each place. So, you know, you be the, you know, you can be the urban ambassador, and I can be a rural ambassador. We can have a back and forth. You know, we're not that far from Chicago.
No, and you know what? I had this student, I taught sociology in Chicago, and it was like a community college on the South Side, very, you know, working class, super diverse classes. And this one, I told their final program, for their final project, that they had to come up with some solution to a social problem that we talked about in Sociology 101. And the one student just said, like, there needs to be an exchange program, like between urban and rural, between neighborhoods, like there just needs to be a required exchange program where these kids have to just be with other families and just see like what they deal with on the day to day. And then there's just a lot less misunderstanding. And I'm like, yeah, that, so this is like the whole idea with the field school. And I'm totally down with that model where you just have to go experience it, look the people in the eye, try to think about what they're dealing with, Then you're never gonna have the same bias or prejudice view towards them. Okay, wait, so we're a little off track. One other question I wanted to ask you before we wrapped up was, what is your vision for the boys?
Well, they're at the point now where the vision for the boys is kind of what they want it to be. And you know, they're 12 and 15, so they don't know. I mean, I kind of feel like I know who Quinn is. Quinn's really, he's going to go to college. There's no, I mean, he's going to, the kid's super bright, super duper bright. And he's really interested in agroecology. So I'm just really encouraging him. I mean, I've let them both know. And I really want them to very deeply know that, like, hey, you know, this farm is going to, you know, be here and be available. And I want you to come back with, at the same time, kind of like, you know, if you don't, I'll change gears. I mean, I will, I'll shift gears, and that's, you know, the relationship will change and, you know, it'll be something different. But like, that's sort of like my goal, is to, you know, make a place where you're going to want to come back to it and settle down in the area and make your life around here.
And you do say that, like, you know, that you would prefer that they took advantage of their heritage and the life.
Yeah, I'm pretty clear about that. I think Emily hedges that a little bit. She's like, well, they can do whatever they want. And I'm like, well, yeah, they can, but I get to have a preference. I'm going to let them know.
And they can decide what they want. Like, yeah, I mean, but, you know, right. the you can do what you want is also an indication of a preference, like go and do anything your heart desires. And that was kind of what I got as a message from some of the people who I thought of as successful, just like, you know, go do something big, go do something great, like follow your innermost desires. And I don't think it was hedged enough with, you know, but keeping in mind, you have a whole set of resources here, just having been from here, that you really aren't just going to get anywhere. Like, maybe career isn't the only thing, or how much money you can make isn't the only parameter you should be making your decisions in life by.
So that's the you know, that's my own sort of, I you know, I take that perspective. You know, I'm mindful of and don't want to go too hard, like, hey, you know, if you make a different decision, you're personally hurting me and letting me down.
I wouldn't want to go that far.
And I'll be I'll be disappointed in you. Like, so that's, I stop short of that. Like, I am, my relationship with you is riding on your decision to come back and live here. Like, I don't, like, not that, but like at the same time, like, yeah, I mean, I like, that'll be, they, I mean, they know that if they were to go off into the world and come back, that I would have disappointment to deal with, and that would be not what I am hoping. But I'm confident that, you know, if that's, you know, I'll shift gears, and I think they know that I would shift gears, and that's okay. But it's very clear. I mean, I'm very clear, and I'm all, you know, and it's like, and that goes beyond just telling them that, or like, that's my perspective on, you know, when you're making decisions about how you're, you know, where you're going to go to college, you're going to make, when you make decisions about what kind of work you want to do. Like, I'm like always that voice of like counter programming a little bit when I hear that voice that I at this point recognize really, really well, of like, hey, go out and make something of yourself. You know, like, I'm really intentionally and consciously sort of like, I guess, counter programming that, or like being clear about like, well, let's look at that and think about that. And again, you know, like, there are reasons. Like, I don't know. He's, you know, he's 15, so, you know, he has 15-year-old dreams. I'm like, well, you know, if you're as good at soccer as you think you are, and you need to go play professionally somewhere, like, okay, you can't do that here. You know, one of those like long shot kind of silly.
I know,
fantasy
but, and then the other thing is like, they do also have to make their mistakes and make their path and come around to it. Like, look at how long it took me. And it's like, I was telling Patrick the other day, this neighborhood that we're thinking about moving to is just like, you know, it was even the butt of the joke for us growing up, like, oh, these freaking people, you know, they're so like insular, but in the way of like, they will lay down their life for people that they've known their whole lives, kind of thing. And I'm like, man, we've gone all around the world, like so cosmopolitan, and we're just going to end up in this little neighborhood eventually. Like, it's so funny to come back around to this. But then Patrick goes like, wow, how are you cosmopolitan? You live in a field. You'd be more cosmopolitan in Chicago, actually, even in this neighborhood. I'm like, well, yeah, good point. So,
right, like you could be at O'Hare in minutes, whereas now I assume you're not minutes away from a major
No,
airport
right, exactly. My
or a
cosmopolitan decision was to
major
go,
center of commerce and
yeah,
culture.
like to go live in some place like where I'm not near any people or cities.
Yeah.
But yeah, so anyways, it's like a million, there's a million moving parts, but I appreciate you telling me your story today and talking me through this. Anything else you want to mention on the question of going home before that we haven't talked about that before we end?
Boy, that I feel like there's a lot left to chew on, but you know, can't cover everything. It is, I mean, it's a really fascinating and complex on so many different levels, on social levels and individual. But yeah, the idea of going home and that you can't go home, which I think is both true, but also kind of misses the point. I think a lot of it is, I think the core dynamic actually is what you talked about earlier. It's like this idea of home is something that you have to find versus home is something that you just have to commit to. When you commit to it, then it's home, right? Then it's like, here, this is home. Oh,
yeah.
You just found it just like that. Here it is.
Yeah.
Now, you can't go somewhere looking for it and find it. Like, that's impossible. You can say, this is it. Come hell or high water, home is where my feet are here and now. And once you do that, then you create it around you. So like when you can't go home again, it's essentially saying like you're never gonna, if you're not just planted, and even if you are, even if it is awkward, even if it is like, gosh, I left and other people didn't, and that's an awkward process. Like, you know, if you commit to it and say, this is it, you know, then like you said, you find a synthesis with the people around you, you know. You find the people locally who are, you know, your people, so to speak, who you have things in common with, who you enjoy spending time with. They, you know, like those people start to show up. You start to notice them. You start to connect. And the people who maybe you don't connect with as well, you still learn how to find a synthesis with them. But the whole process starts with choosing and committing to, like, well, this is it, and I am essentially taking the spreadsheet brain, trying to find something better. And like I'm retiring that and just planting here, and it's like and I'm gonna work to be satisfied with that, which is a really un-American
yeah,
idea
you know what? Like
at this point.
When you're talking about this, the other thing that I like didn't even really realize when I first got on Twitter. Just having said that, like, I moved my family to Uruguay, people are like, oh my gosh, that's so like exotic and it's so sexy and it's like such an adventure. And just thinking about like, oh, you went and lived in this other place. And like, I think there is still this like sense of, if only I get to this utopian place, then all my problems will be solved. Like, I just, like, the real perfect community hasn't been tried yet. Like, all these intentional communities, people traveling around. And yeah, our kids did have a lovely time here, and it is a really nice place. But not every place has its pluses and minuses. And I think like I'm gonna have a lot harder time selling the story of commit to your home wherever that is, and work to be satisfied, than to just move.
And work to be satisfied.
Yeah, that's going to be like the hardest sell. But I do believe it, though. I mean, and I think what you're saying, if you show what that looks like, it's such a deeper level of satisfaction. When it's the same thing around like the marriage discourse. It's a deeper level of satisfaction that's really hard to describe in any quantifiable way that it's better. But anyone who's in it knows that it is. And so, you know, either do it or don't, but like work to be satisfied is the right approach. Sorry.
No, it really is. It's why kind of, you know, the Rolling Stones Satisfaction is like the quintessential rock and roll song, like the quintessential rock and roll song, and sort of like captures a lot of our modern ethos, ethos, and to go there at the end here, say like, you know, this is the way capitalism breeds us to be, right? Like, there's something better. There's something to like more. We're choosing. We're consuming. You know, we are sort of, you know, making a choice about what's best, what we can afford, this and that. And we're constantly weighing the utility of things.
Yep. Utility and marketplace. Like, what's my marketplace value? What's the value of my home? Even now, looking at homes, my dad was like, you know, what's this as an investment? Like, how much can you make back on this? And I was like, well, is it pretty? Is it cozy? Would I be comfortable there? Like, there's utility outside of what I can make on the home.
Yeah. Home is not commodifiable. Like houses are.
Yeah.
You know, home is not. Home is, it's not a commodity. It's not like, it's a completely different way of thinking. It's a completely different way of being. And it doesn't fit. And capitalism, and the consumer capitalism, as we have, I mean, that word capitalism, yes, it's too broad, but consumer capitalism as it exists and has existed, is deeply corrosive of that.
Mm-hmm.
And because it changes the way you think, it changes the way you think about things. It changes the way you think about the world, your place in the world, what it changes, what you think you want. And you start to undo that by, you know, through commitment, and a willingness to be satisfied and not be sold something better.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's so perfect. I'm going to end with that. Thanks, Nate, for sharing. This was awesome. This was very helpful. This makes me excited about my, my new urban rural exchange program field school that is now in my head. So thank you.
Nice. I like it too. Okay, thanks. Good.
You'll be my first visit. You and like Peter Allen. Mm-hmm. Zach. Okay. Nice. Sounds good. Thanks, Zach. Oh my God. Thanks, Nate.